During this colloquy, no portion of Jupiter's person could be seen. But the beetle, which he had suffered to descend, was now visible at the end of the string and glistened like a globe of burnished gold in the last rays of the setting sun, some of which still faintly illuminated the eminence upon which we stood. The scarabaeus hung quite clear of any branches, and if allowed to fall, would have fallen at our feet. Legrand immediately took the scythe and cleared with it a circular space, 3 or 4 yards in diameter, just beneath the insect, and having accomplished this, ordered Jupiter to let go the string and come down from the tree. Driving a peg with great nicety into the ground at the precise spot where the beetle fell, my friend now produced from his pocket a tape measure. Fastening one end of this at that point of the trunk of the tree which was nearest the peg, he unrolled it till it reached the peg and thence further unrolled it in the direction already established by the 2 points of the tree and the peg for the distance of 50 feet, Jupiter clearing away the brambles with the scythe. At the spot thus attained, a second peg was driven, and about this, as a center, a rude circle about 4 feet in diameter described. Taking now a spade himself, and giving one to Jupiter and one to me, Legrand begged us to set about digging as quickly as possible. To speak the truth, I had no especial relish for such amusement at any time, and at that particular moment would most willingly have declined it, for the night was coming on, and I felt much fatigued with the exercise already taken. But I saw no mode of escape, and was fearful of disturbing my poor friend's equanimity by a refusal. Could I have depended indeed upon Jupiter's aid, I would have had no hesitation in attempting to get the lunatic home by force. But I was too well assured of the old negro's disposition to hope that he would assist me under any circumstances in a personal contest with his master. I made no doubt that the latter had been infected with some of the innumerable southern superstitions about money buried, and that his fantasy had received confirmation by the finding of the scarabaeus, or perhaps by Jupiter's obstinacy in maintaining it to be a bug of real gold. A mind disposed to lunacy would readily be led away by such suggestions, especially if chiming in with favorite preconceived ideas. And then I called to mind the poor fellow's speech about the beetles being the index of his fortune. Upon the whole, I was sadly vexed and puzzled. But at length, I concluded to make a virtue of necessity, to dig with a good will, and thus the sooner to convince the visionary by ocular demonstration of the fallacy of the opinions he entertained. The lanterns having been lit, we all fell to work with a zeal worthy of a more rational cause. And as the glare fell upon our persons and implements, I could not help thinking how picturesque a group we composed, and how strange and suspicious our labors must have appeared to any interloper who, by chance, might have stumbled upon our whereabouts. We dug very steadily for 2 hours. Little was said, and our chief embarrassment lay in the yelpings of the dog, who took exceeding interest in our proceedings. He, at length, became so obstreperous that we grew fearful of his giving the alarm to some stragglers in the vicinity. Or rather, this was the apprehension of Legrand. For myself, I should have rejoiced at any interruption which might have enabled me to get the wanderer home. The noise was, at length, very effectually silenced by Jupiter, who, getting out of the hole with a dogged air of deliberation, tied the brute's mouth up with one of his suspenders, and then returned with a grave chuckle to his task. When the time mentioned had expired, we had reached a depth of 5 feet, and yet no signs of any treasure became manifest. A general pause ensued, and I began to hope that the farce was at an end. Legrand, however, although evidently much disconcerted, wiped his brow thoughtfully and recommenced. We had excavated the entire circle of 4 feet diameter, and now we slightly enlarged the limit and went to the farther depth of 2 feet. Still, nothing appeared. The gold seeker, whom I sincerely pitied, at length clambered from the pit with the bitterest disappointment imprinted upon every feature, and proceeded, slowly and reluctantly, to put on his coat, which he had thrown off at the beginning of his labor. In the meantime, I made no remark. Jupiter, at a signal from his master, began to gather up his tools. This done, and the dog having been unmuzzled, we turned in profound silence toward home. We had taken perhaps a dozen steps in this direction when, with a loud oath, Legrand strode up to Jupiter and seized him by the collar. The astonished Negro opened his eyes and mouth to the fullest extent, let fall the spades, and fell upon his knees. "You scoundrel!" said Legrand, hissing out the syllables from between his clenched teeth. "You infernal black villain! Speak, I tell you! Answer me this instant without prevarication. Which is your left eye?"
"Oh, my golly, Massa Will, ain't this here my left eye for sartin?"
roared the terrified Jupiter, placing his hand upon his right organ of vision, and holding it there with a desperate pertinacity, as if in immediate dread of his master's attempt at a gouge.
"I thought so! I knew it! Hurrah!"
vociferated Legrand, letting the Negro go, and executing a series of curvets and caracoles, much to the astonishment of his valet, who, arising from his knees, looked mutely from his master to myself, and then from myself to his master.
"Come, we must go back,"
said the latter. "The game's not up yet." And he again led the way to the tulip tree. "Jupiter," said he when we reached its foot, "come here. Was the skull nailed to the limb with the face outward, or with the face to the limb?"
"De face was out, massa, so dat de crows could get at de eyes good without any trouble."
"Well then, was it this eye or that through which you dropped the beetle?"
Here Legrand touched each of Jupiter's eyes.
"It was this eye, massa, de left eye, just as you tell me."
And here it was his right eye that the Negro indicated.
"That will do. We must try it again."
Here my friend, about whose madness I now saw, or fancied that I saw, certain indications of method, removed the peg which marked the spot where the beetle fell to a spot about 3 inches to the westward of its former position. Taking now the tape measure from the nearest point of the trunk to the peg, as before, and continuing the extension in a straight line to the distance of 50 feet, a spot was indicated, removed by several yards from the point at which we had been digging. Around the new position, a circle, somewhat larger than in the former instance, was now described, and we again set to work with the spade. I was dreadfully weary, but scarcely understanding what had occasioned the change in my thoughts, I felt no longer any great aversion from the labor imposed. I had become most unaccountably interested, nay, even excited. Perhaps there was something, amid all the extravagant demeanor of Legrand, some air of forethought or of deliberation which impressed me. I dug eagerly, and now and then caught myself actually looking with something that very much resembled expectation for the fancied treasure, the vision of which had demented my unfortunate companion. At a period when such vagaries of thought most fully possessed me, and when we had been at work perhaps an hour and a half, we were again interrupted by the violent howlings of the dog. His uneasiness in the first instance had been, evidently, but the result of playfulness or caprice. But he now assumed a bitter and serious tone. Upon Jupiter's again attempting to muzzle him, he made furious resistance, and leaping into the hole, tore up the mold frantically with his claws. In a few seconds he had uncovered a mass of human bones, forming 2 complete skeletons, intermingled with several buttons of metal, and what appeared to be the dust of decayed woolen. 1 or 2 strokes of a spade upturned the blade of a large Spanish knife, and as we dug further, 3 or 4 loose pieces of gold and silver coin came to light. At sight of these, the joy of Jupiter could scarcely be restrained, but the countenance of his master wore an air of extreme disappointment. He urged us, however, to continue our exertions,
and the words were hardly uttered when I stumbled and fell forward. Having caught the toe of my boot in a large ring of iron that lay half buried in the loose earth. We now worked in earnest, and never did I pass 10 minutes of more intense excitement. During this interval, we had fairly unearthed an oblong chest of wood, which, from its perfect preservation and wonderful hardness, had plainly been subjected to some mineralizing process, perhaps that of the bichloride of mercury. This box was 3 feet and a half long, 3 feet broad, and 2.5 feet deep. It was firmly secured by bands of wrought iron, riveted, and forming a kind of open trellis work over the whole. On each side of the chest, near the top, were 3 rings of iron, 6 in all, by means of which a firm hold could be obtained by 6 persons. Our utmost united endeavors served only to disturb the coffer very slightly in its bed. We at once saw the impossibility of removing so great a weight. Luckily, the sole fastenings of the lid consisted of 2 sliding bolts. These we drew back, trembling and panting with anxiety. In an instant, a treasure of incalculable value lay gleaming before us. As the rays of the lanterns fell within the pit, there flashed upward a glow and a glare from a confused heap of gold and of jewels that absolutely dazzled our eyes. I shall not pretend to describe the feelings with which I gazed. Amazement was, of course, predominant. Legrand appeared exhausted with excitement and spoke very few words. Jupiter's countenance wore, for some minutes, as deadly a pallor as it is possible, in the nature of things, for any negro's visage to assume. He seemed stupefied, thunderstricken. Presently he fell upon his knees in the pit, and burying his naked arms up to the elbows in gold, let them there remain, as if enjoying the luxury of a bath. At length, with a deep sigh, he exclaimed, as if in a soliloquy, "And dis all come with de gold bug, de pretty gold bug, de poor little gold bug, what I boozed in that savage kind of style. Ain't you ashamed of yourself, nigger? Answer me dat." It became necessary at last that I should arouse both master and valet to the expediency of removing the treasure. It was growing late, and it behooved us to make exertion that we might get everything housed before daylight. It was difficult to say what should be done, and much time was spent in deliberation, so confused with the ideas of all. We finally lightened the box by removing 2/3 of its contents, when we were enabled, with some trouble, to raise it from the hole. The articles taken out were deposited among the brambles, and the dog left to guard them, with strict orders from Jupiter, neither upon any pretense to stir from the spot nor to open his mouth until our return. We then hurriedly made home with the chest, reaching the hut in safety, but after excessive toil at 1 o'clock in the morning. Worn out as we were, it was not in human nature to do more immediately. We rested until 2, and had supper, starting for the hills immediately afterward, armed with 3 stout sacks, which, by good luck, were upon the premises. A little before 4 we arrived at the pit, divided the remainder of the booty, as equally as might be among us, and leaving the holes unfilled, again set out for the hut, at which for the second time we deposited our gold burthens, just as the first faint streaks of the dawn gleamed from over treetops in the east. We were now thoroughly broken down, but the intense excitement of the time denied us repose. After an unquiet slumber of 3 or 4 hours' duration, we arose, as if by preconcert, to make examination of our treasure. The chest had been full to the brim, and we spent the whole day and the greater part of the next night in a scrutiny of its contents. There had been nothing like order or arrangement. Everything had been heaped in promiscuously. Having assorted all with care, we found ourselves possessed of even vaster wealth than we had at first supposed. In coin, there was rather more than $450,000,
estimating the value of the pieces as accurately as we could by the tables of the period. There was not a particle of silver. All was gold, of antique date and of great variety. French, Spanish, and German money, with a few English guineas, and some counters of which we had never seen specimens before. There were several very large and heavy coins, so worn that we could make nothing of their inscriptions. There was no American money. The value of the jewels we found more difficulty in estimating. There were diamonds, some of them exceedingly large and fine, 110 in all, and not one of them small. 18 rubies of remarkable brilliancy. 310 emeralds, all very beautiful. 21 sapphires, with an opal. These stones had all been broken from their settings and thrown loose in the chest. The settings themselves, which we picked out from among the other gold, appeared to have been beaten up with hammers, as if to prevent identification. Besides all this, there was a vast quantity of solid gold ornaments, nearly 200 massive finger and earrings, rich chains, 30 of these, if I remember, 83 very large and heavy crucifixes, 5 gold censers of great value, a prodigious golden punch bowl ornamented with richly chased vine leaves and bacchanalian figures, with 2 sword handles exquisitely embossed, and many other smaller articles which I cannot recollect. The weight of these valuables exceeded 350 pounds avoirdupois. And in this estimate I have not included 197 superb gold watches, 3 of the number being worth each $500 if won. Many of them were very old, and as timekeepers, valueless. The works having suffered more or less from corrosion, but all were richly jeweled and in cases of great worth. We estimated the entire contents of the chest that night at $1.5 million, and upon the subsequent disposal of the trinkets and jewels, a few being retained for our own use, it was found that we had greatly undervalued the treasure.